Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. This is Fascinating Ohio, a show where we tell the story of friends and neighbors doing interesting things. This week is a special edition of Fascinating Ohio because it is the James Beard Award edition, one of the most prestigious awards in the culinary and food industry, and Columbus has some outstanding nominees. This hour, we're going to hear from an outstanding chef, baker, and bar who are all on the short list for the award. Let's start with the chef. A talented chef and Ohio State grad, and he has not taken the typical path a top chef would take, from graduating with science degrees to culinary school to competing on the hit TV show Top Chef, and then opening two restaurants in Columbus. His hard work and talent are getting noticed. He has been nominated as one of the best chefs in the Great Lakes region for the James Beard Award. Joining us now is Chef Avishar Barua. Thanks for being here, Avishar.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are the owner of Agni and Joya's, and congratulations on the James Beard nomination.
Thank you so much.
What did you think when you heard about the nomination for Agni?
Generally, I'm in disbelief. I'm not used to, I guess, recognition and awards. It was never one of my growing up things, so it's very surprising to see. We're in a very amazing city with a lot of talented chefs and a lot of awesome bakers and bars, as you see. So it's really cool to be amongst them in this.
So you were nominated, you own both restaurants, but you were nominated specifically for your newer restaurant, Agni. Can you tell us the concept, that, like, for people who haven't been there, what's the goal of that restaurant?
Sure. A lot of what we like to do is kind of like break the formality or break like previous structures, because we've been around stuff in the past. So we like the idea and kind of precision of fine dining. We don't really like the pretension. We approached Agni as like a fun dining restaurant, is what we call it. It's almost like a dinner party where you go. You let us know in advance if you have any allergies or things that you don't like to eat, and then we build an entire menu around that.
Oh, and so is it a fixed menu? I was looking, whenever you make a reservation, do you know what you're going to get?
In general, you do. We like to keep a few surprises. Our thing was always, when I kind of grew up, I was promised a lot of things, like, you know, I would become a doctor or all these amazing, I'd go to Disneyland, all these amazing things would happen that never happened. So what we do is we under-promise and over-deliver. So we'll say like we have like 6 courses and we'll give you 12 instead, because we like the idea of like surprising folks in this day and age. It's nice to give them a pleasant surprise, right?
12 courses.
15 now, but just,
It just keeps growing while we're talking.
Yeah. Eventually we'll say it's too much, but we're still going.
So. You're just throwing food at people.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. My mom, like when you go to my mom's house, she was actually the inspiration behind it. The restaurant kind of feels like a house as well too. Whenever you go to like a Bengali household, they'll almost kill you with food to the point where when you're full, they'll say, eat a digestive pill and keep on eating. It was kind of their way of showing love. So we thought we'd try the same approach.
Okay. And so what is the style of food there?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I would call it a contemporary Columbus or Bengali American, only because my parents are Bengali and I was born in America. If we say we're one specific thing, it kind of pigeonholes us into saying all of our dishes have to be the same. And we're truly inspired by the city we're from, because, you know, my perspective of Columbus is different than maybe your perspective. I grew up in a Bengali-American household, so I grew up eating chicken curry. I didn't grow up eating meatloaf, but both those things exist in Columbus. So why can't we serve both of those, you know? So that's kind of our approach.
So someone could go to your restaurant and they could get the chicken curry and meatloaf in your 15-course meal?
Yeah. Right now, it's we try to have a theme. Like, everything has a good story, and all of our dishes have stories, whether it's empowering the staff or empowering a memory we had. This specific one is actually travels. And it's not just my travels, but all of our, you know, we all like to go on vacation sometimes. And when we go on vacation, we pick up one or two things where we had a really good moment. And it doesn't have to necessarily involve a dish, like, there's like a pad thai, you know. You have pad thai in Thailand or something like that. You can't recreate that in Columbus because you had it in Thailand. And it was a time and place, right? So we go like, what would it feel like to have that dish here in Columbus? And how would you adapt that? And that would be what our version would end up being.
Okay. Are you making the food? I mean, I'm sure you have a great staff, but how involved are you day to day?
My thing is, I wish that I was just like on the line cooking, because it's my favorite thing to do in the entire world. That gives me immense satisfaction. But what would give you more satisfaction is, you know, we talk about how Columbus has so many amazing people, and we hire and empower those people so they can create their own pathway too. So a lot of the cooking is done by them. I just try to reinforce and teach good habits as best as I can, and then teach creativity after that.
So the uniqueness of this restaurant, do you set the menu or do you work with your team on that?
Work with my team, 100%. I always have ideas. That's the weakness of like kind of being spontaneous all the time. It's like, I want to do this. But then you stop for a second. You're like, can we execute this times 250 times, you know, like in a day? If you think about 15, if we did 50 people times 15 plates, each person, that's a lot of dishes to go out. So we have to think of practicality in those things. And the staff is great at keeping me in check. They're like, hey, be careful with that one. Or why don't we try this? And so it's always more fun to collaborate, I think.
So you did not take the typical path to becoming a chef. You graduated from Ohio State with degrees in psychology and biology.
Yes.
But why did you not decide to follow that path?
To be honest, it was kind of a path that was set for me. At least biology was. Pre-med was the pathway. My father's a physician, and my parents both came from Bangladesh. So if anybody can relate to that, having a family from somewhere else, they always kind of have an idea of, hey, we don't want you to go through what we did. We want to set you up for better. And occupation in America was a huge thing for them. So it was like doctor or lawyer, you know. A psychologist wasn't on there, actually. Psychology I picked up because, you know, I figured it's a very easy way to control people. I'm just kidding. I realized that I could relate and understand. I look at psychology as, like, you know, it's like a really good way to understand why we do things. And specifically in kitchen environments and our marketing, a lot of the stuff that we do is we want to talk to people and, like, hear them out. Because if we can understand them, we can accommodate them better.
Okay, so you decided to go to culinary school. Yep. I'm sure that was met with some pushback at the beginning, right?
It might still be met with pushback. I don't know. So, you know, I don't think that stuff ever goes away.
Well, you've been on Top Chef, and you have these successful restaurants. You're nominated for James Beard Award. They're proud of you, I'm sure.
You could ask them. I think the kind of the nail in the coffin for them was when I named the restaurant after my mom. That was like the big surprise. Everyone's like, oh, that's so sweet. And I was like, well, actually, it's twofold. One, it's nice, but two, if they really hate the fact that I'm cooking, they have to hate themselves at this point because I named a restaurant after her. So.
There's your psychology degree in action, right? Yeah. Yes. Okay, so you went to culinary school and then you gained experience locally here. So you worked in a kitchen in Delaware, Ohio, but then you also were in New York City. Yep. Is that... Where did you become the chef you are today?
Sure. And I can, if you don't mind, I'll step back just a little bit. I did go to culinary school at Columbus State.
Okay.
So it was a 3-year chef apprenticeship program. So while I was in school, I was able to I worked in my restaurant at the same time. So I had to get 6,000 hours on the job. And in those 3 years, I was in Delaware at 1808, and we opened up Veritas. And I think what I learned the most in those experiences is you learn to work with people, right? It's like restaurants are a team sport. One person generally can say they run it, but it works so much better when you acknowledge that everybody is working hard to make a common goal. And I didn't have a lot of experience working with so many people. Like, I went to a private school. I went to Ohio State, and you just kind of isolate over there. But when you're in those kitchens, you can either thrive off that energy and realize that people can support you and get to common goals. And in Delaware at 1808, it was like, we did 250, 300 covers a night. Mm-hmm. I got thrown right into the grill station, as you can see. Learned a lot of lessons very, very quickly.
He's showing us all his burn marks on it.
Yes. When that happened, my mom's like, she was very sad to see that I was getting harmed in the process. But I think it's a lot of lessons learned. And I was kind of put in a place of responsibility right away. So you can always, when you're in a situation, say, hey, I want to make this better, or I can, you know, just be part of the process. And we always tried to work together to do stuff. So as that happened, my plan was to go to Chicago, actually. I like Chicago because it's more Midwestern than New York City. But before we went, the chef there, Josh, was just like, hey, why don't we open up another restaurant a few doors down? Just kind of do what you want to. We'll figure it out. Or let's try some new stuff in Delaware. We opened up Veritas, and it was a really fun learning experience because we had no idea what we were doing. And because we were in Delaware, we were just far enough away that we could kind of do whatever. A lot of things pulled together. We look back at it, and I take pictures of everything that I do. And back then, I thought it was so cool. And I look at it, and I'm like, oh, what was I doing? It was crazy. Then after that, we went to New York City. You would say that could be your internship or residency if you were to equate it to another career path. And I learned a lot of lessons very quickly about the big city. But what I learned most was that actually I wasn't as inexperienced as I thought. I was lacking confidence. You see a lot of confidence in New York, and I gained that from working amongst people that were way better than me. But what I didn't like was the way that people were kind of talked to, or the way that it was set up like a hierarchy. And that kind of led me to do my own thing because I was just I don't know if I can vibe with the system of hey, you're coming here, we're going to isolate you and put you in a specific position and talk down on you. And I didn't think that was appropriate. So I was like, maybe I'll just try to do better myself, you know, or something different myself.
Was it a lot of the yes, chef environment?
That would be the lowest, the minimum is yes, chef. Beyond that, there's a lot more stories, but that would be another episode, I think. So.
All right. This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides, and we are talking with Columbus chef and restaurant owner Avishar Barua, who is nominated for a James Beard Award for Best Chef. And, you know, calling you Best Chef can lead us into talking about you competing on Top Chef. How did that come about?
Complete chance, I think. I received an email, and I thought it was...
You didn't apply.
I did not. I didn't even know you could. I didn't know anything about the stuff. And TV kind of, it's going to sound really weird, but TV was never my goal or image. It was just, I was just trying to cook in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So when I received the email, and it was during 2020, so I was like, this has got to be a joke, because in the middle of a pandemic, they're not filming this.
Right.
I thought they were going to put me on a plane and drop me off in Cleveland or something, you know, like nothing wrong with it. But it's, it was like, I thought someone was like really like playing like a restaurant punk or something. So I just went along with the process. And then every time it was like, you know, you go back and forth in this process of like, hey, tell us about these things. So what would you do in these situations? And I did all those things, and you know, it was like silence. And then they said, hey, you're on. And I said, okay, well, it's still a pandemic season, so maybe you'll cancel filming. Like, you have all these things in your head that would say that it's not going to actually happen. And the second it set in was actually when the cameras turned on for the first time, because they like isolate you, they keep you away from everybody, you don't get to see anything.
Yeah.
When you start filming, you're actually filming. So at that moment, I froze for 15 seconds, and I was like, just start running. Like I'm running. I just wasted 15 seconds. So the entire experience was wild. Specifically, probably because I really didn't believe it until it started.
Yeah. Are you glad that you did the show in retrospect?
I am. I think it's really awesome to see so many talented chefs in the country come together. But more awesome is like, I haven't really seen a lot of people like me or like from Columbus or anything like that on the show before. So if somebody can watch that and be like, hey, I saw this guy do it, maybe I can do it too. Like that makes it worth it every time, because the crazy amount of insecurity that comes out and all of your like fears, they come alive on the show and they get publicized nationally. So you have to have a very strong foundation to do that kind of thing.
Is that your psychology degree again helping you out?
I think it's actually gotten in my way when I was there. So
I got it.
Yeah.
All right. So you have two restaurants open now. Joya's Cafe, you mentioned, is named after your mom. Can you tell us about that restaurant?
Sure. It's a daytime cafe. Honestly, the plan for the restaurant was to kind of open up like a to be a way that I could do private dinners and one-on-ones with people, because I was being requested to do smaller and smaller events. But the city of Worthington, it has its own energy. It's so crazy. Like when my dad's brother came to America, he moved into Worthington, and we were very familiar with the area. So it seems like it just has an awesome energy. But people just kept knocking on the door and asking us for coffee and when we're going to open. And I couldn't give them the heart to say like, hey, this is actually going to be a private office and my thing. So we're just like, let's just open the doors and see what happens. And we went from, you know, like, just we thought we'd sell maybe 10 breakfast sandwiches a day to like now we sell 250. It's crazy. I don't know. It's but the energy is awesome. But we think of it as like a breakfast place for people that work in restaurants, because no one wants to wake up early and you want the same food whenever you wake up. You're like, I want spicy food in the morning, so I want fried rice in the morning. I don't necessarily want the same traditional like English breakfast every day. So we have those kind of offerings.
Okay, so you can get the fried rice at 10 a.m. or what?
8 a.m. Yeah.
8 a.m.
Yeah. And you can get it extra spicy too, which is again like, if I don't know what people do the night before, but sometimes it helps get you ready for the next day, you know.
Okay, and then earlier we talked about the restaurant you're nominated for the James Beard Award for, which is Ogni. Yep. You opened that a little over a year ago.
Yeah, so we opened up two. The plan was to open two in 2 years. We ended up opening two within 1 year, which I don't recommend. So lessons learned, please don't do that. It was very interesting to try to say, hey, I need to split my mind into two different locations at the same time and the same day often. But one's daytime and one's nighttime. So I kind of planned that so I could go from one to the other.
Okay. So yeah. Joya's is in Worthington. Tell us where Ogni is.
It's in Brewery District. So right in German Village-ish area. Our neighbor is Antiques on High. So we are right there across from Granger Insurance in the beautiful German Village area.
And you're seeing a lot of success. It's not just that you have won or that you've been nominated for a James Beard Award for the restaurant, but you open up reservations, you know, a month in advance, and people are taking those reservations.
Yeah, I think it's very exciting, and it speaks to the awesomeness of Columbus. When I grew up in Columbus in the industry, it was a lot of people were like, oh, you can't do stuff like New York, you can't do stuff like Chicago. And partially I agree with that, but I think that's the strength of it, is we can do our own thing. And once we like empower and engage in that, we have so many people that can relate to us and want to come out and have an awesome, intelligent conversations, talk about food and share an awesome meal. We have seen 98% of our guests are so excited to be there, and we have like return guests. They come back. And I think that's crazy for a tasting menu to be like, hey, I want to come back twice in a month. Like I would have never done that. So
they'll come back to have the same menu.
Yeah, the same menu. And they get to have a different perspective or a different story, or they'll bring their friends and they'll bring their family. And it's like really an honor to be able to be part of somebody else's memory. Like it's like the connection is ridiculous.
Well, we've been talking with Avishar Barua, and he's the chef and owner of Ogni and Joya's. And thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And good luck with the nomination.
Thank you. Good luck to everybody that was on there.
James Beard Award nominee. Coming up, we're going to talk to another fascinating Ohioan who is also nominated for a James Beard Award, this time a baker. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. And this is Fascinating Ohio, a show where we tell the story of friends and neighbors doing interesting things. This week's Fascinating Ohio is the James Beard edition. Columbus has some outstanding nominees for this prestigious award that recognizes the best of the best in the culinary world. And next, we're going to meet a nominee for Best Baker. If you're looking for a carb-loaded treat to satisfy your sweet or savory tooth, well, maybe it could be an egg Danish with habanero jelly and double smoked Ohio bacon, or an apple butter cinnamon roll, or a classic chocolate croissant. Dan the Baker is the spot for all of your baked good needs. And joining us now is bakery owner Daniel Riesenberger. Welcome to All Sides, Daniel.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, and congratulations on the James Beard Award
Thanks.
Nomination. What did you think when you heard that?
I was totally shocked. I was honestly like, oh my God. So I had been suggested to self-nominate in December, and I'd just been so busy with the Christmas season and Panettone and all we were doing, I just hadn't had the time. And so seeing the nomination, the semifinalist come through Wednesday, I was like, oh my God, I did not expect it. And it was a huge honor. And I've been like, so it's already been a busy season, and having this extra, it's been amazing. You know, really cool honor.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it on your radar? You said you could
self-nominate. Okay. But I'm not like a competition. Like, I just want to do the best bread and the best pastries and like the best business we can. And so like the honors like that are not necessarily what we're going for, but when they do occur, it's like the most amazing thing. It provides like such inspiration. Like, we're already like doing our best, but then it's like recognition that we're doing our best as well from like such a greater group of people. And now it's like all the chefs I know are reaching out, and just in general, like it's been a really beautiful thing to experience.
Yeah, and I learned a lot about the James Beard Award in general, just because I thought it was just for chefs or restaurants. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that, you know, a baker, and later we're going to talk to a bar owner. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it's a baker could be nominated.
Yeah, like hospitality in general, and yeah, like service and ethic and, you know, all that around like the service industry. So not just restaurants, not just chefs. Mm-hmm. It's neat.
So you got your start as a full-time baker at North Star, right?
Yeah. Well, I kind of like shifted into the role there. This was in 2007. I was like 20 years old and was just kind of like wide-eyed into the culinary world. Hadn't gone to culinary school or anything, and was just like blown away by being in a real kitchen, you know, making food from scratch. And one of the bakers there, the full-time baker, moved to New York on a whim. Mm. And like, they were like, we need a baker tomorrow. And I was like, okay, I'll bake. And they were like, oh, you're doing great. And it was like, I didn't know what I was doing, but was doing well with it kind of thing, as far as I, you know, my skill set was at the time. Which now, I mean, I was not a great employee. I was definitely like, it wasn't like I was doing a really great job or anything at all. But it was still really inspiring. And a big thing was I got a sourdough culture that I still use from one of my coworkers there.
So were you making like the big cookies that they have?
Yeah, the peanut butter, the oatmeal cookies, the truffle chocolate cookies.
Okay,
like,
but then
focaccia.
Yeah, oh, they're focaccia.
Yeah,
yes. Okay.
So I was like in it, and it was great. I was like, this is amazing. And yeah, then the baker who left actually sold me a bunch of his like kind of home baking equipment, because he moved to NY like on a whim. And sold me that stuff, and I actually still have the table as like our display table at the cafe.
Great.
And kind of like, you know, it was like, here, you're the baker now. And it really was just like a growing and learning experience the whole time, you know, practicing out of my house, bringing the breads to the farmers markets that I was shopping at, and then eventually selling at the farmers markets with a stand, then moving into like the Hills Market let us use their kitchen for about a year. Mm. And then now we're in our current kitchen, which we've been in since about 2013. So it's been kind of just like evolving from the most like humble beginnings, like bringing a basket of bread to the farmer's market, just me. And now we have like production equipment and many employees and, you know, recognition too. It's like a really been a cool thing to grow.
So you mentioned briefly that you're a gifted sourdough starter. Tell me about that.
So I was working with a person who went to the Cordon Bleu for a bread class, and she just was talking about how exciting it was to be baking her bread at home. And she was like, do you want a sourdough? And she brought it in the next day. And that was like a game changer to taste the bread. So I made bread off of that real soon, as soon as I could, pretty much. And it was like the best bread I'd had in years, because we had this good bread in Detroit that I remember. But, you know, in Columbus, really nothing had hit the spot. And making it myself, I was like, oh, this is like so good. I can't even go back. Even making home bread with yeast was like not the way. So, you know, discovering the like flavor and the quality of the sourdough was like, oh, this is revelation. And then, you know, bringing that to the market, you know, like the farmer's market that I was shopping at, the customer was just like, what are you doing with bread in your basket? Like, what's that? And I was like, oh, they're buying it. And, you know, it's just the recognition that's been really every time anybody new tries the bread, they're like, well, this is so different. Like, why is this so tasty? You know, because of the sourdough that we use in it. Natural leaven for all the breads. And it really imparts this like delicate flavor, this like kind of rich kind of custardy texture to it as well.
So the bread is the heart of your baking, would you say?
The bread is, but the pastries have a life of their own, honestly. They've, like you mentioned them, they like are the sales king right now, I mean, for sure. But the bread is like a backbone, I consider it, of the bakery. And we sell quite a bit of like our country bread. It's like this dark crusted kind of like mahogany looking loaf with the creamy custard interior. And they're, you know, available fresh from the oven. Like if you get there at 9 a.m., you're getting a loaf that's like out of the oven 10 minutes ago. Mm. So it's pretty rare to find, you know, like that kind of bread. But, you know, we've diversified a lot, but, you know, we really try to keep that kind of like Dan the Baker ethos in every product. So it's always like, oh, this is like the best version of this thing that I've ever had.
So when you started baking professionally, you and your dad, you ended up building a wood-fired brick oven in your backyard. Is that true?
It is true. Yeah. This was at actually a rental house in northern Columbus. And it was like this huge construction that we put together, you know, of made with fire brick interior. It was like a, you know, fire the chamber, let it kind of temper, and then bake for 12 hours on the same firing. And it was like a crazy experience. I was 22-ish at the time, and you know, baked with that oven for about 3 years, and then did move on and had to demolish the oven after we were out. So it was.
Just going to ask if you still had it.
No, yeah. It was a sad time because it was like, you know, trying to figure out what we were doing next, and I didn't have the business set up at that time either. Mm-hmm. So moved on, and someone from Craigslist actually like dismantled it and rebuilt it in their backyard, like using the same bricks.
It lives on somewhere.
Somewhere, okay. Which is kind of cool to think, you know, because it's like it was sad, but now it has a life of its own now.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking with James Beard nominated baker Daniel Riesenberger. He is the owner of Dan the Baker. So what techniques and skills do you think that you have mastered that garnered you this nomination? What do you hear people talk about with your
I feel
items?
Like it's, like the practice is so big, you know, like the repetitions of because I'm not just an owner, I'm there every day shaping, not every single day, but for years and years, I've been like very involved in the production aspect of things. And I feel like that gives an owner baker so much more kind of continuity sense of the product than just somebody who owns and kind of operates the thing, you know? So doing the physical reps myself, I get a lot of...
So you're like, in the kitchen every day?
Every day.
Even though you're Dan the Baker.
No, exactly. I'm like literally there making your bread. You know, I don't do everything. My crew is amazing and they do so much. But being able to like be there and influence, you know, the decisions that are made and work with the team to make sure that like the vision is kind of coming through is, I think, like the biggest thing. And just having a good palate, you know, like really being confident and saying like, I don't like this. I love this. Like that really, if you're not able to like really like kind of combine, like separate those things, like if it's good or bad, like it's not going to really come across. And I feel like a lot of chefs aren't really sure like which is best. And so it's kind of gets lost in translation sometimes.
What made you decide to start a business? You could be baking anywhere for anyone, right?
I always felt that it was like there was something lost in what's produced. Like a lot of companies stop short in quality. And I was like wanting to make something of like the best thing, you know, like at a time we were making our own butter using local milk for the croissants, doing like everything, like no shortcuts in ingredients and like execution. And, you know, in my travels, I was kind of reassured like, oh, you know, this is how like Tartine and like these other really big names do it, with like the respect for the ingredient and like doing the best quality thing that they can. And I think that's like what a big thing that sets us apart is just having the most, you know, the highest quality version of that represented we can.
And your menu, are there a few items that stay the same or is your whole menu always changing?
There's a strong core menu, you know, we like don't deviate. That's a big thing that we really like I like the enthusiasm of chefs where they like bring on new menus all the time, but it's especially difficult with a bakery because it's like you want to get your like staple item, you know, like your cardamom knot, your chocolate croissant, your ham and Gruyere croissant. Like, we couldn't ever not have those. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we want to have those like exciting items that are seasonal and only around for 3 weeks or 2 weeks, just for the obviously value of the, you know, having that excitement. But we can't be like changing the menu all the time because it's like a staple item. Breads and pastries are like a daily thing for so many people. And, you know, we don't want to like shift it up and be like, oh, well, they don't have the best thing now and there's no solution. But like, no, we have that and we have like the other items as well. And so it's kind of like nice to have the like both things there.
Do you have a favorite menu item that other people thought was like, why are we doing this? But you were like, oh, trust me.
I feel like a lot of the stuff is like, I have to kind of sometimes convince me like, oh, we should do this. And it's like, okay. But then it's like when we see the item that I'm like, my mind's eye made, it's like, oh, no, yeah, that's really great. So it's like, I think there's often a little bit of a, and it, in the community sometimes even too, it's like, oh, there's like a little bit of an unsureness when a new item will come up. And then it's like, oh, it will become a really popular thing. And then sometimes it's like instant success and we make an item and it's like, you know, we sell out the first weekend and mm-hmm. can't keep up, you know? Yeah. So it's kind of fun to see which was which.
And ingredients seem important to you. You Huge. Seem to really care about what you're picking. You're not going to get just any old grain.
It's like the most important thing, roughly. I mean, the business and the community factor is huge as well. And like nurturing the employees and nurturing the community that we serve. But part of that to me is the ingredients, because using organic, using local ingredients is such a big part of creating a good community and nurturing the health of the land and the health of the people. Even just tasting the products compared to like a generic croissant made with conventional flour, conventional dairy, like you're just going to taste the difference and like feel the difference. And I mm-hmm. don't, it's like, that's a lot of hype. I feel like there's a lot of people like, oh, it's going to be, but it really does feel different and taste different and digest differently. And I feel like the organic is a huge factor. And, you know, I'm really, like, I try not to support like commodity agriculture, really like try to focus on the local, keeping the dollars local as much as possible. You know what I mean? We do use larger scale organic flour for a lot of our breads, but there's like, we're not in a grain, a superior grain region like, you know, the Great Plains are. So, you know, we have to kind of do what we can with that. But, you know, as far as our local dairy and local eggs, we're like exclusively using Copia eggs for all of our mm-hmm. products. Including our panettone. It's just like we really try to use as much local as we can, which is really uncommon, especially in something like baked goods, because it's such a, it's like you don't see the milk, you know what I mean? Like
yeah, it's in there.
It's in there, you got to trust. But it's like, no, we're spending like a lot more than the commodity bakers because it's of real value to me. And we don't even really brand it that much, but like people know, and like the organic and just like the flavor, it's just completely different. So it's really a big thing, and it's always been since the beginning, in doing seasonal items like local tomatoes, different local vegetables throughout the season, summertime, and different fruits, strawberries when they're in season from the Han farms. Different, you know, as the season goes along, can kind of use all the different varieties of fruits and veggies that are available to us.
Are you seeing, I mean, as an owner, are you having trouble? Everyone seems to be talking about inflation. Egg prices are talked about all the time.
Yeah, so. I know it's been major, especially in the last couple of years. Inflation has been so big. And it's not just food costs, you know, the packaging costs and like all of the like secondary things that you're like, whatever. Like, no, it's not whatever. Like that case of paper
bags. That plastic baggie is important.
$200 now. And it's like, we can't sell it without that. And it's like, it really shifts the, you know, because it's like I do my very best to pay a very strong wage to everybody that works for me. So it's like that plus inflation, everything else, like I got to consider their inflation as well, you know, the prices that they're paying mm-hmm. for everything so that they're making a living wage.
But you need people to still buy the
But food. I need to, yeah, exactly. So it's like I'm already charging so much for the croissant, but it's like, well, it's like organic and French butter and local milk and all of that. So it's like it's all got to come from
But someone will still look at you and be like, I'm not paying $50
like,
for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they're like $12 for a croissant and you've got to be crazy. I was like, well, there's like literally a lot of other people like lining up to buy it. So I get that. I get the shock. But like, you know, there's a lot of options out there. You know, Costco has super great deal on croissants if you want. You know what I mean? I'm like, and I'm not, no pressure. There's literally no pressure. We're just providing a really good option. And if people want, you know, the best thing that's made with the best ingredient, and it's like, you know, I compare it. I'm like, I'm not comparing ourselves to like Gucci, but like people, there's a market for that. And I mean, there are some people who don't like it. And
yeah,
don't
you
like,
can get a purse at Target. But yeah, you know, if you
right
want
there.
If you want a Gucci, then you get the Gucci.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like, we're not like Gucci highfalutin vibes, but like, you know, I try to relate it to that. And people buying, you know, fancy cocktails and a fancy dinner out, like there's a lot of work that goes into a loaf of bread or a croissant. And, you know, part of it is the physical work, but part of it is ingredients and the space and all of that. So it's definitely been, we've always been the more expensive thing. It's always been a bit of a barrier, you know, but I feel like as we've grown, as our notoriety has grown, it's been easier, relatively. You know, we still have people come in and like, what is this?
Well, it's a good barrier. If they're coming to you, they should be aware of what they're getting.
I think so.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So speaking of that, where can people find your products? You have a brick and mortar.
We do. Mm-hmm. So we're on Dublin Road, right near Grandview Avenue. It's a very hole-in-the-wall location, and people are always calling, like, where are you? I'm like, I feel like I'm outside, but I don't know where you are. And it's in the Grandview Commerce Center, 1028 Ridge Street. We also serve a number of grocery stores in town, the Bexley Natural Market, the Hills Market, Wylands, Copia Farm, Beechwald Natural Market, the Lucky's Markets, both in Clintonville and Victorian Village.
Are you delivering to those places?
Yeah, we do. And
daily?
Actually, today. So we only do two delivery days for grocers. Mm-hmm. And we do have a number of restaurants we serve to as well. Thursday and Friday for our grocery deliveries. And we're actually only open right now Thursday through Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like pretty limited at hours since it's very chef driven. Like by chef driven, I mean like I'm making the stuff a lot myself with the crew, you know, so we're there, you know, it's a pretty limited amount of hours. We are hoping to expand our hours in the future, but you know, at the moment it's just the 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of allows us to keep our quality high, you know, keep it a little bit scarce as well, you know, like having it be a little more like, oh, it's a special time. It's not available all hours. You know, you can only go there during these hours, and we sell out pretty often as well. So, but the best place to go is to the bakery because you get that like fresh bread experience, fresh pastries. We're baking throughout the day, pretty much every day, like especially Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So we'll be baking like three or so bakes of sourdoughs. So
you don't have to line up right at open to get the fresh. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. That way you can like come at like 11 and we'll have like fresh breads coming out. You know, some of the specialty items do sell out, like I say, like a little bit earlier than some may like, but you know, that's kind of what makes them special and rare.
Well, that was Daniel Riesenberger, the owner of Dan the Baker and a James Beard Award nominee. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And good luck with hopefully your nomination turning into award, right?
Thank you.
Coming up, another fascinating Ohioan, the James Beard nominee, this time a bar. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. And this is Fascinating Ohio, a show where we tell the story of friends and neighbors doing interesting things. This week is Fascinating Ohio, the James Beard Award edition. Columbus has some outstanding nominees for this prestigious award that recognizes the best of the best in the culinary world. And next, we'll meet a nominee for Best Bar. If you're looking to try a cocktail inspired by Andy Warhol's Campbell's Soup Can painting, or how about one that is based on the melting clocks painted by Salvador Dali? Well, Lawbird is your place. A wine and cocktail bar here in Columbus is serving up some of the most unique and best drinks in the U.S., including a menu inspired by the Museum of Modern Art. And joining us now is Annie Williams-Pierce, who co-owns Lawbird with her husband, Luke. Welcome to All Sides, Annie.
Thanks, Amy.
So congratulations on the James Beard nomination. What did you think when you heard about that?
It was overwhelming. We actually, Chef Abhisar is a good friend of ours, and he texted us like, oh, congrats, guys. This is so cool. And we hadn't seen the list yet. And my exact response was, on what? Like we had no clue. So it was very exciting, very overwhelming, but we're thrilled. So.
Wow. Well, what a nice surprise to find out from a friend.
Yeah.
Your friend, like, why are you congratulating me? You're all skeptical.
Right. I was like, what did we do this time?
Well, so I learned something about James Beard Awards because I truly thought they were just for chefs and restaurants. I didn't know they were for the entire culinary world. Did you know you could be best bar?
Yes, actually. So they've started expanding into kind of the beverage side of things the last few years. They do it a little differently. So for, you know, chefs and restaurants, a lot of that tends to be done regionally. You know, so it's like Great Lakes region and West region and things like that. But for Outstanding Bar, it's across the U.S. So there are 20 of us, what's called long listed. Mm. There are 20 of us who got long listed for Outstanding Bar, and it'll go from 20 to 5 in April.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yep.
Well, fingers crossed, here's hoping. So
Exactly.
But yeah. You're definitely going to say it's a pleasure to be nominated, like they say, right?
Truly. Truly. I mean, it's overwhelming. It really is. It's the kind of like Oscars for food and bev. So to be this, you know, basically we just call ourselves a little mom and pop, you know, restaurant or bar down in the brewery district. So to be on the list with some of these people is insane.
So you have been working in the restaurant business your entire life. You started very young working at the the iconic Chefinette, right?
Yes.
Tell us about your start there.
I grew up in Arlington. I could walk to work. I wanted a little bit of independence. I wanted a job and just kind of fell in love with food and bev and hospitality. I'm a theater kid, which I'm sure will surprise nobody. So it's very much kind of the same sort of interactions and expressions. And it just figured out really quickly that that's something I love to do. So
how did growing up in Columbus shape your career in the restaurant industry? What does the Columbus restaurant scene mean to you?
I think right now, and especially over the last couple of years, there's just been some phenomenal growth in the sort of owner-operator sector. I think right before COVID, we started to get some great momentum, and it's finally coming back of, you know, people kind of my generation owning and operating their own businesses, which is pretty remarkable. You know, growing up, Columbus was still a little, you know, lots of like test market, and, you know, we had lots of, like, we would always have dinner at, like, Rusty Bucket and Bag of Nails and, you know, places like that. But I think there's an intense and like incredible diversity here that I'm so proud to be a part of.
So how did you go from working at 14 at Chefinette to creating fancy cocktails? Where's the through line there?
Yeah. You know, I come from a family of cooks and eaters, and my brother's a baker. And so, you know, food has always kind of been our love language. And so when I kind of realized I could do similar things like in the kitchen, like behind a bar, I kind of fell in love with it. You know, I love just making people happy and making them something they would never make for themselves. And then sort of took this on as my outlet. You know, I actually do use my poli sci degree quite a bit sometimes.
Oh, okay. So
bar,
you have a political science degree. Yeah.
Yeah, I went to Loyola in Chicago. So I lived in Chicago for a while and was still working in bars, you know, through college, and came home and swore it was only going to be for 6 months. And that was, what, 13, 14 years ago. So
I can imagine. I can imagine you using that degree with people at a bar wanting to chit chat politics. That could be
that could be
fun and dangerous.
Yeah. Right now we don't do too much political talking. But I do a lot of education with my staff, and my husband and I teach public cocktail classes. And I do a lot of education on kind of how either specific spirits came to the United States or ingredients. And, you know, you talk a lot about kind of global movements and, you know, things like that. So I get to use my degree quite a bit.
Now let's talk about your bar, Lawbird. Where does that name come from?
Oh, it's a deep, dark secret.
Oh, you're not going to tell me. Okay.
No.
Well, that's why I couldn't find the answer anywhere, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Where is it located?
We are located in the Brewery District. So we're just south of downtown. We're at 740 South High Street, the corner of Frankfurt and High.
And you specialize in just having a very unique cocktail menu. You want people to come in and buy an interesting cocktail, not just a beer.
Yeah, I mean, we have beer. We'd love, you know, we want to serve you what makes you happy. Mm-hmm. What makes us happy is the weird stuff. You know, we always say like our sweet spot is weird but good. Mm. And I think we've spent the last 5 years really building, you know, building like the trust of the community to be like, all right, guys, just trust us. Come in, try something weird. You know, like we know what we're doing. Hopefully it's something that you enjoy as well.
So do you always have an ever-changing menu, or do you have staple cocktails that are always there?
We have a little bit of both. We can always bang out the classics. You come in and you're really feeling, you know, a penicillin or a Vucaré or, you know, something like that. We can always do that. But we do change our menu probably 3 to 4 times a year. And they're usually pretty intensive flips. So we put a lot into them. And then we do 2 month-long pop-ups every year as well, which is like a really transformative experience. And we decorate the space and it becomes a totally different bar for a month at a time, too.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides, and we are talking with Annie Williams-Pierce, one of the owners of Lawbird, a James Beard nominee for Best Bar. Your innovative style, you were recognized several years ago, back in 2017. You were the first woman to win the Bombay Sapphire Most Imaginative Bartender Award. Can you tell me about that award?
Yeah, it was a series of competitions. The finals were held in London, and it was kind of like a 5-day challenge. Think sort of Top Chef style, but for bartenders. So we had media challenges, and they closed down a wing of the Tate Modern Art Museum, and like we would go do like art challenges and just all sorts of different expressions and ways to kind of pull creativity out of us in sort of high pressure situations. I met some absolutely incredible people, and it was a true thrill to win. It's something I'd been kind of working at for a while. And so to finally take it home in London was pretty fabulous.
Wow. And you were the first woman to win?
Yeah, the way they changed the structure of it. But yes, in the last, they've been doing the competition for 15 years now. I was the first woman to win, and then my dear friend Carly won the next year. So far, we're still the only two women to ever win.
Is bartending a man's world, and you are just breaking into it?
Not anymore. I think, you know, 10, 15 years ago, absolutely. But there was a lot of kind of caricature that went along with the resurgence of the American cocktail movement. You know, I think we can all imagine like someone in suspenders and, you know, like a little armband and a stupid hat.
And a mustache, of course.
Yes. Exactly. So, you know, I can't grow a mustache. So obviously I'm not qualified. But I definitely don't think that's the case anymore. There are some women just absolutely running the bar world right now. So
you could be a bartender at any of the lovely fancy restaurants here in Columbus. What made you decide that you wanted your own bar?
You know, my husband and I are industry kids, and we really wanted to do our own damn thing, and this was going to be the way to do it. We're kind of so stubborn in that we weren't going to not figure out how to do it. Now, opening 4 months before COVID hit was pretty wild. We definitely didn't have global pandemic in our year one business plan, but we knew it was something we really wanted to do.
Yeah, so you opened in late 2019, unfortunately. Yeah. Yes, and then you had to shut down. What was your pivot?
Yes.
What was your pivot that kept you open?
Yeah, so we closed March 15th, 2020. I remember it very, very vividly. And then once they legalized cocktails to go, we basically built some false walls in the bar and turned the front like 200 square feet into a little bodega. We sold wine, we sold snacks, we sold cocktails to go. And we ran that for almost 11 months. We did that for quite a while. We built some great relationships with our community and with our neighbors. And, you know, because we were brand new, no one knew us yet as a cocktail bar. So a lot of people met us first as this little bodega, this little shop. And then we reopened as a bar in May of 2021.
Okay. Yeah. Now, the actual brick and mortar store or the bar, you don't just have cocktails. You have like snacks and kind of bites to eat too. Tell me about that.
Yep. Just, you know, salty, crunchy, delicious things that keep you having another cocktail, you know, it's things like, we do hummus, we do like a rotating Chex mix. We have cured olives. We have a little kind of like a smoked salmon, like a tinned fish plate. We always do hot dogs. We love hot dogs. So we always have a Wagyu hot dog on the menu. And then Wednesday nights are we have a bougie hot dog night. You can come in and get, you know, two creative hot dogs for $7. Just to like have fun. Like who doesn't love a hot dog and a cocktail, you know?
Right. So are you going to, do you have any plans to expand the bites to eat portion? Or are you going to stick to cocktails and the bites to eat are just the extras?
We have tried different iterations. We've had some really talented people in our kitchen. But at the end of the day, we're a bar and we're okay with that. You know, we're located to such great restaurants. We're right by Agnew. We're right by Chapman's. So we don't mind being people's kind of before and after stop. Because then you get to kind of check out our little neighborhood, which is all we want people to do.
And you mentioned this briefly earlier, but you teach private classes. So tell me about that. What are the classes?
Yeah, so we do, every month we do a different theme. It started out just as 4 classes a month. Let's hope we can sell them out. You know, the very first one was a martini class. I love martinis. I think they're sorely misunderstood. So we did a, you know, get to know a martini class. And this month we did no proof and low proof cocktails for Dry January. And then next month we're doing New Orleans themed cocktails. So it's a really fun experience. We've built so many great regulars. You can come in, you taste a few things. I, you know, share my very opinionated opinions on things. And, you know, we make some cocktails and we let people learn. So we've been doing them for about a year now. It's something Luke and I get to do together, which is great because we're sort of divide and conquer at most of the other times, you know, owning a small business. But they've become really popular. I think we're doing 9 classes in February. So, you know, we've gone from 4 to 9. So it just gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah. I was going to ask, are they a particular day and time? Like, do you shut down the bar to have the class?
We do them during the day. Mm-hmm. So we'll do them on Saturdays in the early afternoon. So we'll do 2 classes and then flip and get ready for service.
Okay. So tell me about this Museum of Modern Art menu that you have going on.
Yes.
In my intro, I mentioned a few of the the ones that you have. Explain the Andy Warhol cocktails.
Yeah. This one's actually great. I love it. It's very much lobbered, like weird but good. I think we'll be making it on Good Day Columbus on Saturday morning. So if people want to get a little peek at it, you know, the idea was the, you know, menu of modern art, and we wanted to make sure we had different art styles represented. Luke picked this piece in classic Luke form, was like, cool, here's the prompt, make it weird. So
okay,
that's what we did.
I feel like I need to ask what color it is. Is it
it's like pinkish red.
Yeah,
absolutely. We serve it in a soup can though, so you don't like see the color, but the whole service is very cute. But there is quite literally Campbell's tomato soup in there.
Wow. Okay. And tell me about the Salvador Dali one.
The Salvador Dali one, we actually did a piece called Apotheosis by Salvador Dali. It's one of his lesser known works. I love Dali. I've been to Figueres, the museum in his hometown. But this one kind of has this eccentric sort of garden feel to it. So we took the bones of a classic cocktail called A Last Word. And a last word is lime, gin, green chartreuse, and Luxardo, which is a sweet maraschino liqueur. And we kind of just did a weird, weird twist on it. So we're using mezcal. We created our own raspberry white cardamom chartreuse. The piece has these really beautiful kind of pink magenta notes in there. So the drink itself really looks like that.
Okay. And we just have a few seconds left, but after the modern art collection goes away, can you give us a preview of something coming up next?
Yeah. So next, actually, the whole month of April, we'll be doing a pop-up with Beam Suntory for the Cherry Blossom Festival. Mm-hmm. So we're doing a Sakura-style, like a Japanese pop-up for the whole month of April. We'll decorate the bar. It'll be very immersive and just lots of fun, wonderful things for people to try.
That was Annie Williams-Pierce, owner of the Lawbird Bar in Columbus. Annie, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Amy. Appreciate it.
And congratulations again on your nomination.
Thank you. Yeah, we're thrilled.
This has been Fascinating Ohio from All Sides. Every Thursday, we talk to friends and neighbors with an interesting story to tell. And this week, we featured a chef, a baker, and a bar owner, all making a name for themselves in Columbus, and now nationally as well, because they are each nominees for the James Beard Award. Thanks for joining us. I'm Amy Jurevich. This is 89.7 NPR News.